I'm here with Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of The Durant. Alexander, we have some incredible news breaking with Michael Flynn and what's been going on with him. And this comes from his lawyer, Sidney Powell, who's one of the best in the business dealing with issues like what Michael Flynn is going through. And it looks like, and God, she makes a compelling case from, yeah. This is from the documents that she's released and we've seen. I mean, we still don't, I don't think we have a full picture of the entire case yet.
No.
But it really looks like Flynn was entrapped. The 302s between Strzok and Page and the FBI were doctored.
Yeah.
This was a real hit job. I mean, they had him targeted from the get-go. Alexander, there's also a very complicated story. For me, it's complicated, but it affirms everything that we have been reporting on Russiagate over the last 3-4 years. So take us into this story, Alexander. I don't know, pick the spot where you want to start this off at so we can launch into this.
Right. Now, first of all, can I just explain what it is we're talking about? This is a written submission that Sidney Powell, who, as you correctly say, is a great lawyer, has submitted on behalf of Flynn, who I have heard, by the way, she's acting for pro bono for free. But I'm not absolutely certain about that. But certainly she seems to be working very hard for him.
I've heard that as well, by the way.
That she submitted it to the court. And it's intended to obtain disclosure from the U.S. government of various documents and information, which she says should have been disclosed to Flynn over the course of the investigation, which led to him confessing to having lied to the FBI. And as a result, being convicted of this offense. And she says that the failure to disclose this information to Flynn jeopardized his legal rights and his constitutional rights under which are set out in a Supreme Court case called Brady. People have heard of the expression Brady rights. Well, that's basically what she says was violated. Now, that's a fascinating story in itself, and I do want to come back to it because I've always felt very sorry for Flynn. But it's the contents of this submission which made my jaw drop. I have to say, when I read it, there were things in it which I thought were absolutely extraordinary. And they go to the very heart of what was going on at the start of Russiagate. Now, I think before we go into the detail of this and unpack it, I think we need to remember a little bit about how Flynn became involved in Russiagate. Right. Michael Flynn is a US general, served in the US military for 38 years, fought in Iraq for 5 years. He was actually active service for 5 years, became head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, opposed the policy of the neocons to launch this war in Syria. And as a result, he basically lost his job as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, became involved with Donald Trump, and became Donald Trump's national security advisor for a short time at the start of Donald Trump's presidency. In the period just before Donald Trump became president, he had a series of telephone conversations with various foreign policy officials and leaders from around the world. And one of them was the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak. And Kislyak, on one occasion, telephoned Flynn whilst Flynn was on holiday in the West Indies. And they spoke over a mobile phone. Well, at least Flynn spoke over a mobile phone. And, of course, the entire telephone conversation, which apparently was conducted in open, in other words, it wasn't encrypted, was being tape recorded, listened into and tape recorded by, one presumes, the FBI or one of the alphabet soup of intelligence agencies that exists in the United States. And what then happened is that there were a series of stories planted in the US media, including a very important story by a journalist called Isikoff, which alleged that Flynn had discussed with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, US sanctions that President Obama had recently imposed on Russia, and that Flynn had, it sort of hinted that Flynn had agreed some sort of quid pro quo with Kislyak. The idea being that the Russians would veto in the United Nations Security Council some kind of resolution that was going to be made over the status of Jerusalem. And in return, the Trump administration would lift sanctions. That was the sort of story that was being spread. And Flynn denied that, and then he met with two FBI agents, one of whom was Peter Strzok, and Peter Strzok supposedly got Flynn to deny that he discussed sanctions with Kislyak, and then Flynn was told that, in fact, the tape recordings did prove that he had, in fact, discussed sanctions with Kislyak. And Flynn resigned as national security advisor and pleaded guilty of lying to the FBI. And that gave a huge momentum behind the story of Russiagate. I'm sorry if I've had to spend some time explaining all of this, but I think unless you know this background, what I'm going to say next isn't going to make a great deal of sense. Anyway, what Sidney Powell now says, and she's set it out in great detail, is that the FBI, when they decided to interview Flynn, knew that he had done absolutely nothing wrong in this conversation with Kislyak. There was no quid pro quo. There was no suggestion by Flynn to Kislyak that if Russia vetoes a resolution on the status of Jerusalem in the General Assembly, the US government might at some point lift sanctions. Kislyak did bring up the subject of sanctions, but Flynn apparently would not be drawn in on them, pointing out that, you know, he was not, this is still the transition period, the Trump administration had not made any decisions about this, and anyway, this would be decided later, and that the Russians should not have any expectations about it. There's a perfectly proper, innocuous telephone call. The people in the FBI had all these transcripts. They knew that was the case. They nonetheless set about trapping Flynn. They sent Peter Strzok and another FBI agent to meet with Flynn. They didn't tell Flynn that he was being investigated in any way. They fooled Flynn into thinking that they were having a conversation with him about various things. Flynn showed them around his office, he described various things, chatted about, you know, places he'd been to, things he'd done in a very open way. Strzok then led him into discussions about the Kislyak call. Flynn said he didn't remember many of the things about the Kislyak call. He wasn't categorical about some of the things that it was alleged he'd been categorical about. And Strzok came away convinced that Flynn was telling the truth, that he was being honest. So the FBI, knowing that Flynn had committed no crime, sent Strzok and another agent to investigate Flynn and to question Flynn. They didn't make it clear to Flynn that this was an interview that was a part of a kind of criminal investigation. He wasn't aware of that. Flynn wasn't advised to have legal counsel present to assist him, as was his right if he was involved in a criminal investigation of this kind. He was tricked into answering questions about all sorts of things. He gave entirely honest questions, or at least that was Strzok's opinion. And it seems that he didn't implicate himself. So it then seems that the FBI took Flynn's various answers and they got Lisa Page, Strzok's girlfriend, who, as we know, was very hostile to Donald Trump, along with Peter Strzok. She then edited the 302s to make it seem that Flynn had positively denied things that he'd actually said he didn't remember. So he was tricked into this conversation, not realizing that he was being investigated. There was actually no crime, because there was no wrongdoing on his part. There was no crime for which he might be investigated. And the record of that conversation was then doctored. Subsequently, he was not told all of this and was maneuvered into confessing to a crime he probably didn't commit.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit more, Alexander, just to make sure that we explain this in the simplest of contexts.
Yeah.
We definitely have evidence that Strzok and Page were editing the 302s. There's a conversation that Powell has released, which actually says Strzok to Page, quote, "I made your edits," when discussing the 302s. So they were up to all kinds of funny business after the fact. They were doctoring documents.
Indeed. Sidney Powell actually goes into great detail about all of this. So, I mean, I mean, this is in a court deposition. I presume it's true. I presume she's got evidence to support all of this, and it's damning.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's damning. And I mean, it's very detailed. I'll put screenshots up for our viewers. I'll even put links of some of the tweets that have the screenshots in the description box so they can take a look as to what was being said. I mean, it is jaw-dropping. You're exactly right. But let's break it down to how they entrapped Flynn, because this is sinister, to say the least. So Flynn was going to become the NSA guy. In other words, John Bolton made that position popular today. I mean, Trump put neocon John Bolton, but before all of that, before all of this revolving door of NSA guys for Trump came into effect, he had Flynn picked out, correct?
Absolutely. Now, can I just say something? Of course, Flynn is not only not a neocon, he is opposed to the neocons. And I've always felt myself that one of the great problems Donald Trump has had as president is that he has been he's been missing Flynn. Flynn was the person who he was depending upon to execute his foreign policy and to put into effect his foreign policy ideas. They were a team. So breaking Flynn, discrediting and destroying Flynn has left Trump very isolated. And if he's made all these strange choices, people like McMaster and then the disaster of John Bolton and whatever, it's because he's not had Flynn beside him, working along with him to put his policies into effect.
Yeah, Flynn was with him on the campaign, and Flynn was his first choice. And after that, you know, it's kind of thrown the Trump White House, you know, into a little bit of disarray as to who to put in for that position. Trump had Flynn as his guy in the beginning.
Yes, yes.
And that got completely destroyed.
Yes.
Coincidentally, Alexander, I think they targeted Flynn from the get-go, and I think they targeted Flynn,
and this is something else which we need to unpack, because we'll come to that shortly, because there's a lot in this deposition.
There's a lot, and And they targeted Flynn, I think, after he went to Moscow and he was at that RT media convention. I was there. I attended that. I actually saw Flynn speak. I saw Sophie Shevardnadze actually interview him. I was just sitting in the audience, as were hundreds of other people. It was really no big deal. It was a good convention. It was interesting, and that was that. But I
Can
think
I
they.
just can I just tell you can I just titillate our viewers by telling them who else was there alongside Flynn, Jill Stein, Vladimir Putin, Sophie Shevardnadze, and Alex Christoforou? It turns out that Joseph Mifsud was there too. The one person who wasn't there was me. But anyway,
I was living in Moscow at the time, so for me it was a two-station train ride over.
But Mifsud's presence is very important,
Yeah, and
and
no
it's
one
been,
knew.
no one knew, and it's been disclosed by Sidney Powell for the first time.
Yeah.
We'll come to that in a moment.
No one
Let me
knew. No,
mention.
he could have been some guy sitting in the audience for all we knew.
Well, indeed.
Incredible, but
Anyway.
anyway, it's like a Forrest Gump moment,
Yeah.
you know. So Flynn is going to be taking this very important position, and I imagine taking this position, Alexander, in preparation, you need to talk to the diplomats and the ambassadors that you're going to be
Yeah.
dealing with, correct? And I imagine
Yes.
Kislyak was one of those people that he needed to reach out to.
Absolutely. It was his job. He was going to be National Security Advisor of the United States. He was acting as Donald Trump's senior foreign policy aide during the transition period. Diplomacy, foreign policy goes on all the time. It was entirely appropriate for Michael Flynn to be talking to foreign diplomats, as he told Strzok. He'd spoken to scores of them, not just Kislyak. One of the problems he had remembering what exactly he said to Kislyak was because he'd spoken to so many other people also. And of course, it would have been very easy to refresh his memory of what he'd said to Kislyak. All Strzok and the FBI needed to do was show him the transcripts.
Right. So they had him targeted. They spied on that phone conversation, just like they had Papadopoulos targeted,
Yes.
just like they had Maria Butina targeted.
Yes.
You know, I believe they
Yes.
had all these people targeted. Incidentally, Maria Butina is now back in Moscow.
Yes.
They released her. I think they wanted to get her out of the way and get rid of her. You know, not
Yes.
have her be hanging around. You may want to address that as well a little bit.
Surely.
But they had all these people targeted. Flynn was one of them, and I believe they had him
Yes.
targeted because of the fact that he was at that convention, at that
Yes.
event. I think that was one of the
Yes.
reasons they wanted to kind of tie this Russia Trump thing and Flynn fit perfectly for their purposes. So he has this phone call. He doesn't remember what he says to him after the fact. Days,
Yeah.
weeks, months go by. He
Yes.
doesn't remember
Yes.
exactly the details of the conversation with Kislyak. And here comes the FBI knocking on his
Yes.
door.
Yes.
Strzok's one of
Under
these.
false pretenses. If that's very important, very important.
Under false pretenses. Flynn thinks it's just something routine, casual routine.
Yeah.
His guard is down. The
Yeah.
FBI has something else in mind, or at least Strzok and
Exactly.
Comey have something else in
Exactly.
mind.
And this is what Sidney Powell has identified so clearly. The FBI plotted this. There were apparently several strategy meetings within the FBI, chaired, by the way, by McCabe, in which they schemed about how to bring Flynn down, basically through these interviews. One consequence of all of this, by the way, was that when they decided to speak to Flynn, they didn't inform White House counsel. That's Don McGahn, that's the White House's senior lawyer, that they were going to be interviewing Flynn. And they didn't even inform the Deputy Attorney General, Sally Yates, no friend of Flynn and no friend of Trump, as we know. They didn't do that because they knew that what they were doing was legally improper. And apparently, after the event, I get this again from Sally Yates's, from sorry, Sidney Powell's deposition. Sally Yates made very clear that she was very worried about the whole way in which the whole interview with Flynn was conducted.
Okay, so let me know if I get this part correct. They get Flynn to tell them that he did not speak with Kislyak about lifting sanctions. In other words, he
That's right.
denied telling Kislyak anything about sanctions, even though Flynn is kind of taking part in a casual conversation. He doesn't think anything of it. He says, no, I didn't say that. He probably
Yes, but
doesn't.
he also made it very clear that his memory of the
Right.
conversation wasn't very good. That is extremely important in my opinion, because of course there were many things discussed apparently during this call, and as he said, he wasn't. It doesn't seem as if he was intending to deceive, and Strzok came away from the meeting with Flynn thinking that Flynn was telling the truth, that Flynn was being honest and open about what he was saying, that
Right.
he
And
wasn't setting out to deceive anybody.
yeah, and why would Flynn think that he was in trouble when the context of the meeting was anything but,
Yeah,
an
exactly.
investigation or an interrogation or anything like that? In Flynn's mind, he thought this was routine and
Well,
nothing of significance. I mean, otherwise you would have had legal counsel there.
that is what he was led to think, as you correctly say. Otherwise, he would have had legal counsel there. Don McGahn, the White House counsel, would have been involved, and of course, Flynn would have had his own counsel. It would have been conducted in a completely different way. I have to say, I do think Flynn was being a little naive. Just meeting
I
with
was
the
just going to say
FBI
that, yeah.
in that kind of fashion. I mean, clearly, he didn't see these people as potentially dangerous. But given that the media was full of stories about Russiagate right up to that time, I think with hindsight, he should have been a lot more careful than he was, and a lot more careful about saying about talking about the things that he did say. I mean, the very fact that they brought up the subject of his conversation with Kislyak should have alerted him, it seems to me, to the fact that these people were not coming with good intentions. Because, I mean, at that point, I mean, this has been one of the great mysteries for me right from the get-go. I could never understand why Flynn would lie about a telephone conversation. He must have known, as the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, that the US intelligence community was taping. I mean, he would have known that. So why would he lie about something like that? I've never understood that. But his right response to Strzok and the other FBI agent was to say, I don't remember much about the call. I am sure the call was recorded. If there's any concerns about it, let's see the transcript and reconvene, and we can discuss it then. But none of that in any way changes the fact that the whole way in which the so-called interview was conducted was completely wrong, wholly inappropriate, and was clearly an attempt to trap Flynn and to bring him down. And Sidney Powell says that there'd been a whole succession of meetings within the FBI, chaired by McCabe, but with Comey fully in the know, in which this was all strategized.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so he made a human error, Alexander. Maybe he was naive. He made a human error. You don't get your life destroyed by
Absolutely,
making
absolutely.
an innocent, I don't want to say innocent, a naive human error. I mean,
I do call it
yes, he should
innocent.
have known, and yes, he should have been on alert,
Yes.
but sometimes you're not always on your A game every day.
Of course not. And I come back to I do think it was an innocent mistake. I mean, he meets these two rather personable men. He doesn't realize that they are there, that they're actually investigating him. They don't tell him that they are. He apparently, as I said, they talk, they laugh, they joke about places he's visited. He shows them around his office. He tells them, and introduces them to all sorts of things. He has no idea at this point, and up to this point, that he's been led into a trap. Maybe as a former intelligence officer, he should have realized it. But, I don't think you can say that because he was naive, that made him guilty of anything. I do call it innocent. It was on Flynn's part, an entirely innocent mistake on the part of the FBI, of Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page and the rest. There was nothing innocent about it. It was a absolutely calculated and cynical trap.
This is the part that I need a little bit of clarification. So he denies, or at least he tells him, I don't really remember what I said with Kislyak. He's telling Strzok this.
Yeah.
But I don't think I told him anything about sanctions.
That's right. So that's hardened up in the 302s to make it seem I didn't tell Kislyak anything about sanctions. So that's where the editing of the CO2,
that's the editing. 302s
they come. They harden it up in order to make it appear that Flynn was making far more categorical denials than he actually was.
So they have the telephone recording.
Yeah.
They've got the transcript, which says that they did talk about sanctions.
Yes, and they know perfectly well, as I said, that nothing in that telephone call was said, which was at all inappropriate.
Right, but they did mention sanctions, but there was nothing said that was inappropriate. But they say, okay, you did lie to federal officials.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I mean, it's important to stress that a lie isn't something you say which it turns out isn't true. A lie is something you say which isn't true and which you say with the intention of deceiving someone. It's that element, that intention to deceive, which it seems wasn't there.
The lie is on Page and Strzok's part. They're the ones that hardened up the 302 so that it looked like Flynn was lying when in fact Flynn may have talked or brushed upon sanctions. Who knows?
Yes.
Kislyak may have said sanctions and Flynn may have said, okay.
Yeah.
What's up with that? Who knows what they said? But hardened it up to make it look like it was an intentional lie.
Absolutely. Bear in mind, we've never been shown this transcript, so we don't actually know exactly what Flynn and Kislyak did say to each other. That's particularly absurd, by the way, because if the US has a transcript of that call, of course, so do the Russians. So again, who is this being kept secret from? I can't see. But let's put all that aside. We know that nothing was said in that call which was inappropriate. We know that Kislyak did bring up the subject of the sanctions because the FBI has told us as much, that they've read that in the transcript. We also know, which wasn't made clear before, that Flynn freely admitted that he didn't remember much about that call.
Yeah. It's the lies on the FBI's part. It's clear as day now. It's so simple. Flynn wasn't sure what he said. He says, I probably didn't talk about sanctions. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Who knows what he told them? They hardened it up to say Flynn denied it.
Yes.
They have a phone call, a transcript where sanctions may have, and even if sanctions were discussed, even if Flynn said, I'll look into the sanctions with the incoming president, I'll discuss it with him. So what?
Well, indeed. But of course, it seems, of course, as I said, we've never seen, been shown this transcript, that he didn't even say that.
Exactly. And even if he did, so what?
So why investigate him? I mean, this is the other point that Sidney Powell makes. Why question him at all about a conversation of which the FBI already had a transcript? Now, can I just say, this struck me years ago, and I'd already made that point in various articles I've written for the Duran. This is before we started our channel. I'd repeatedly made the point that this whole interview makes no sense because it doesn't seem as if the FBI were investigating a crime because they already had all the evidence which proved to them that no crime had actually been committed. I mean, the entire thing was set up to trap Flynn. But can I just say, can we go a bit beyond this?
Yeah,
Because there were
wrap it
other
up.
things.
Okay, now I think
Yeah, there are other
we've
things
summarized what's happened here.
with Flynn.
Yeah,
But
pretty well.
there are other things which I mean made my jaw drop even further. Now, I mentioned Joseph Mifsud, and it turns out that Joseph Mifsud was in that audience at the RT dinner with all these important people, including Alex Christophorou and Peter Lavelle. So you were all there. Flynn was there, Jill Stein was there, Vladimir Putin was there, and Joseph Mifsud was there. Now,
Assange made an appearance via satellite as well, so.
well, there you go. Well, there you go. Even Assange was in some form there. Alex Mercuris, he was not there. But what now turns out to have been the case is that Mifsud has some kind of connection with Stefan Halper. Stefan Halper is this mysterious Cambridge professor. We're going to come to him in a moment. But Sidney Powell says that the US government has gained possession of Joseph Mifsud's cell phone. How does she know that? I don't know. That's what it says. The deposition actually says that. And she also says that the cell phone confirms, the information on the cell phone confirms that Mifsud was a US government agent. So, Mifsud is a US government agent, according to Sidney Powell. The US government has the proof. Presumably, it knows who its agents are, but it's also got Mifsud's cell phones, so it knows what's going on. Mifsud and Halper are talking to each other. They're feeding back all this information about Flynn having all these contacts with the Russians. You rightly say that seems to have been the moment when everybody started to worry about Flynn and think that Flynn
Well, Mifsud was at Mifsud saw Flynn there, so there you
was.
go.
So there you go. Now, it turns out that Halper is very close to a man called Jim Baker. Jim Baker is the director of the Pentagon agency called the Office of Net Assessment. The Office of Net Assessment is an agency within the Pentagon that is supposed to look at long-term threats and is clearly connected with the US intelligence community. It is apparently the Office of Net Assessment, or ONA, to use it, to call it by saying, the ONA, that is apparently paying Halper his very large salary that Halper is getting for the intelligence work he's doing for the CIA and for the FBI. And Halper apparently is reporting all of Flynn's activities to Jim Baker, who is the head of the ONA. And according to Sidney Powell, it is Baker, the head of the ONA, who is most likely the person who leaked the stories about Flynn having engaged in these conversations with Kislyak to Isikoff, which got published. I think it was by the Washington Post. I might be wrong about that. But it might not have been the
Was it
Washington
Isakov or Ignatius? David
Post. It was
Ignatius.
David Ignatius.
David Ignatius, yeah.
David Ignatius. You're quite right. It was not Isikoff. Yeah, it was Ignatius. But as I said, apparently Baker was talking to Ignatius. Ignatius was leaking all this classified information. You must remember that the telephone conversations between the Russian ambassador and Michael Flynn were classified. They're classified calls. That's why we still haven't seen the transcript, by the way. And Baker has this connection with Halper, and Halper has some kind of a connection with Mifsud, and Mifsud, his cell phones are with the US government, and these cell phones prove that Mifsud is actually a Western agent. Mifsud is, of course, the same man that we and Halper are the same people who are trying to frame George Papadopoulos. So, you know, we're getting so many threads now.
It's all coming together.
It's all coming together. I mean, you know, they're all the same people are coming up all the time. But, you know, we have Halper and Mifsud trying things on with Papadopoulos. And it now turns out that Halper and Mifsud are also involved with Flynn. And it seems that Halper was spreading stories about Flynn. At least this is, again, what Sidney Powell says. Sidney Powell says that Halper was spreading stories that Flynn had this relationship with this Russian woman that he met in Cambridge, you know, at an academic conference. This is a Russian woman who's a historian about, you know, Russian espionage activities before the Second World War. You know, all historic stuff. They exchanged some emails, and apparently Halper was the person who was behind all the stories that we were reading, that they had some kind of a relationship, and that this proved again that there was some sort of intelligence connection between Flynn and the Russians. So Halper and Mifsud, the, you know, the Laurel and Hardy, if you like, of the unsuccessful Papadopoulos dangle, that was Papadopoulos's dangle, are also the same people who are up to the same sort of tricks with Michael Flynn. I mean, you know, it sends the mind reeling. So we have the FBI gauging all its plots. We have this triangle of Halper, Mifsud, and Jim Baker, really important official, the head of ONA, the ONA, leaking all this information to Ignatius. It was just extraordinary. That, you know, clearly there's links. And I have to say this, I have got to say this, there must have been some kind of political direction behind all of this. I accept that perhaps it does seem as if McKay was very paranoid about Russians. It's likely, no doubt, that Halper especially seems to have been very paranoid about the Russians. But would all these people have been acting in the way they did unless they'd been either green-lighted to or instructed to by someone higher up in the Obama administration? I mean, I can't believe that they would have done.
Yeah, this is a real conspiracy, a real collusion to overthrow the president of the United States. I mean, and this is a small group actually of people, because the names keep coming up over and over again, maybe 7-8 people that were charged with this task. Mifsud, Halper, Strzok, Page, McCabe, Baker.
Yeah,
I'm not even getting to the higher ups, the Comeys, the Brennans, the Clappers. Yeah. I'm saying the foot soldiers of all of this.
Foot soldiers, yes.
I mean, these are the guys, because their names come up across all of the entrapment cases, whether you look at Papadopoulos, like you said, you have Mifsud and Halper. You look at Flynn.
Yeah.
Once again, you have Mifsud, Halper, and Strzok. And let's not forget, you also have Maria Butina, who was the person that told Patrick Byrne, the Overstock CEO, to befriend Butina?
Yes.
Peter Strzok.
Well, indeed. Well, indeed. You're absolutely right. And that's how she gets drawn into this absurd web. And she's, of course, being kept in prison for, what I think, it was 18 months?
Yeah.
For doing nothing, actually.
It seems that they handpicked these people that had some sort of connection to Russia, or had some sort of presence at Russian meetings, conventions. Carter Page is another example.
Yes.
It's like they handpicked them.
Yes.
And they said, okay, these are the people we're going to entrap.
Yes.
And this is a real conspiracy. I mean, it's a conspiracy to overthrow the president of the United States.
Yes, and to set aside the results of a US election. And can I say, when we talk about conspiracy, I mean, Sidney Powell actually discusses the conspiracy, this is the only word to use, within the FBI to entrap Flynn. There are what are referred to as strategy meetings about how to entrap Flynn by getting him to make admissions that could be used against him. But again, I have to come back to Sidney Powell's extraordinary deposition, because there's something else there which we haven't touched on either, but which becomes even more remarkable. Now,
Let's hear it.
On the 6th of January 2017, this is before the Donald Trump is inaugurated, Donald Trump has this meeting with intelligence officials. And after it, he has this one-to-one meeting with James Comey. And James Comey shows him information drawn from Christopher Steele's dossier. Christopher Steele's dossier is this incredible concoction, which it turns out is really the only evidence that ever was of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. And Donald Trump, of course, denies everything and says this is incredible and this is ridiculous and this is absolutely ludicrous. And then a few days later, the Steele dossier, after this meeting, gets published by BuzzFeed. And I've always been very suspicious about the timing of that leak. I'm pretty sure that someone within the US intelligence community green-lighted that leak. Anyway, what happens then is that Lisa Page sends out some kind of an email or a tweet in which she's actually pleased about the fact that the dossier has now been leaked, because it means, she says, that now we can start to interview people based upon it. Presumably, because as it's no longer classified, it's become evidence. But there is an even more bizarre development. As soon as BuzzFeed publishes this terrible thing, the British see it all and learn about it. And they learn about the fact that Comey has been waving it in front of Trump. And it's quite clear that at this point, the British panic. And the United Kingdom's National Security Advisor, Theresa May was our Prime Minister at that time, in something of a panic, writes a letter to the US government, which is handwritten. This official, by the way, his name is Sir Mark Lyle Grant. Anyway, he writes a letter. Now, this letter is not classified, but it has never been published, and it has never been disclosed to Flynn or to anyone else. And in this letter, Sir Mark Lyle Grant says, Christopher Steele is not to be relied upon, and the Steele dossier is not reliable as evidence. Apparently, he excoriates Steele and his dossier. Despite that, the FBI and Rod Rosenstein continue to cite the dossier in obtaining FISA warrants.
Where is this letter?
Well, it's one of the letters that Sidney Powell says should be disclosed.
Where do you think it is?
Well, I'm sure that it's in the possession of the FBI and of the US government. I'm sure lots of people within the government have seen it. I'm sure William Barr has seen it. I'm sure John Durham has seen it. I'm sure before very long we will see it also. But bear in mind that in March 2017, after this letter was received and read by, amongst others, Susan Rice, who was Barack Obama's national security advisor, again, this is what Sidney Powell says, but weeks after this, James Comey comes along, gives evidence to the House Intelligence Committee. Adam Schiff, reads out to James Comey and enters into the congressional record large chunks of this ridiculous Christopher Steele dossier. And James Comey says nothing. He doesn't disclose the existence of this letter. He gives no one at that committee meeting any reason to think that this dossier, that there's any questions about it.
If Barr does have that letter or has seen that letter, Barr Durham, Comey is in big, big trouble.
Absolutely. And of course, coming back to Mifsud and Halper, well, we know, because we've discussed it several times. Amazing, by the way, how the media hasn't been talking about this. We know that Barr and Durham together went to Rome and have listened to taped depositions provided by Mifsud. Now, that, as I said, was remarkable. That's a remarkable fact. That was a major clue to me that, you know, criminal proceedings are about to begin. Because, of course, if Barr and Durham go to that trouble, to go to Rome, instead of sending someone else to do it. In other words, they want to hear the evidence themselves. That shows that they are seriously worried. And of course, who is at the center of all of this? James Comey is. I noticed, by the way, that he's saying today, or has been saying today, that he's got nothing to fear, and that if Trump gets re-elected, he'll emigrate to New Zealand. I'm not sure he said the second, by the way, but apparently something to that effect.
I don't know. Comey looked scared. Clapper was doing an interview with Anderson Cooper, and Clapper looked rattled. I mean, he was stuttering throughout the whole interview. He looked very rattled.
Absolutely. And interestingly enough,
Brennan's disappeared.
Brennan's disappeared. And as I said, and Clapper, very interestingly, was hiding behind Obama. He was saying that he only carried out orders, which is an interesting defense. But anyway, interesting defense and begging many questions. I mean, what orders? By the way, he made it very clear, Obama's orders. What were those orders?
Why is Mifsud, if he's a U.S. agent, why do you think he's hiding out in Rome? Is he afraid for his life? Is the agency that he's working for, I would imagine CIA?
Yes. Yes.
Say it's the CIA, I'm not sure.
Yes.
Are they telling him to stay put in Italy?
Very good, very, very good question. Now, I think here we have to go into a bit of intelligence world terminology. A person who is a direct full-time employee of an intelligence agency is an officer. An informer, if you like, somebody who is paid, who's actually paid to work for an agency, who's an informer, if you will. He is an agent. It seems that Mifsud, who is not an American citizen, is an agent or an informer, not an officer. So that's presumably why he is hiding in Rome. And I'm going to make a guess that he wasn't just working for the US. He was clearly working for other countries, other Western countries also. And I'm going to make a guess that one of them was Britain.
Yeah, I think there's a British connection. There's obviously an Australian connection with Downer as well.
Yes, yes, yes. So Sidney Powell has thrown a bomb, a bombshell. I mean, I have to say, I mean, it's been one of the most exhausting things, both in Russiagate and now, I'm sorry to say, in Ukrainegate, is I have to trawl through page after page of documents, which actually, when you drill down through them, they say nothing. I mean, you know, Bill Taylor's testimony in Ukrainegate, which people are talking as a smoking gun. So I read through it. I was looking for this smoking gun. I couldn't find anything there. You know, when you look at these things under a microscope, you know, it just vanishes. It dissolves. Sidney Powell's deposition is not like that. I mean, if the things she's saying are true, and she's a highly reputable attorney, and this is a deposition made to the court, then, as I said, we are looking at extraordinary things. I wonder how she's obtained all this information, by the way. Somebody, obviously, is informing her.
Yeah, someone's informing her. One of the good guys.
One of the good guys.
Alexander,
I'm sure there are many, by the way.
Which there are many. One of the good guys, Alexander. If Barr and Durham, if what Powell is putting out there turns out to be true.
Yes.
If everything we've said...
Which I'm 90% right. sure it is.
Okay. And everything we've outlined in this video,
yeah,
based on what Powell's put out there, turns out to be true.
Yes.
We are seeing a lot of dots connect now. A lot of dots are connecting. And a lot of the same faces are popping up.
Yes.
Across all of the Russiagate, you know, three-year hoax and all the people that were, you know, wrongfully taken down during that hoax. If all of this turns out to be on the up and up, and Barr does not do anything, we're in big trouble, aren't we?
Well, we are in huge trouble. We are in enormous trouble. In that case,
that's my fear right now. Well, nothing's going to happen.
Well, I think it's everybody's fear. And notice, by the way, how Sidney Powell drops this bombshell and the media is silent. So, but if nothing does happen, if really nothing does happen, which I don't believe, I mean, I've been following Barr, I've been following Michael Horowitz, who's the Inspector General of the FBI. I get a sense that lots of things are happening. So I don't believe that. But if I'm wrong and nothing does happen, then the United States is moving fast away from being a democratic, constitutional republic ruled by law and is becoming a national security state.
We'll leave it there, Alexander. Yeah. I think that's a concern of a lot of our viewers as well.
Well, they're right, and they should be concerned. Everyone should be concerned, even people like myself who are not American citizens. If a country like the United States, not just because the United States is a superpower, but because of what the United States, for many people, has come to symbolize, if it is evolving into something like that, then, I mean, you know, this is momentous and terrible thing.
All right, Alexander, we almost hit an hour here. So guys, subscribe, share the channel, help us out, donate to us. You'll find links to PayPal, Patreon, subscribe, start in the description box as well. Your donations really help us crank out videos like this one. This was a tough one. Yeah. Also go to the Durant Shop, Alexander. Quick words about the Durant Shop, which also helps us out when you make purchases.
Well, indeed. I mean, you know, this. Let's talk about good things now. We've been talking about awful things. Our products on our shop, our merchandise, are phenomenally good things. Look at this beautiful mug, 15 ounces, beautiful porcelain. I've been drinking my oolong, my Iron Goddess of Mercy tea from it all day. Beautiful porcelain. It keeps the tea marvelously warm. It does the same with coffee. It's got this beautiful emblem of Russia's Alpha Force. This is a elite special forces unit on it. We've got lots of other great mugs in our shop. We've also got these marvelous shirts like the one that I'm wearing and the one that Alex is wearing.
We have the same shirt today.
Yeah, we have the same shirt today, exactly, with our Duran Golden Eagle there, and 100% cotton, beautifully stitched, fits beautifully, amazingly comfortable to wear, keeps you warm when it's cold, keeps you cool when it's hot. We've also got long sleeve t-shirts, we've got V-neck shirts, we've got polo neck shirts, which are the epitome of smart casual. We've got hats, we've got hoodies, we've got stickers, we've got great, phenomenal things. We've got books about Russiagate and Brexit also, complicated subjects. But, you know, we're going to have to update them because so much is coming out now. And you can find all of these on our shop and you can help us so much so that we can continue to make these great programs for you by buying these great things And you will enjoy having them because they are so good. So many of our customers say so. So help the Duran, help yourself, go to our shop. Alex will tell you how to do it.
You'll find the link to the shop, theduranshop.com, in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of The Duran, thank you very much. Alexander, I think this was our longest recorded video that we've ever done, by the way.
Well, you said it was complicated. Thanks to our viewers for watching it through. But I think if you do, you'll understand the situation much better. And I think it's a compelling story in the end.
And it hasn't finished. We're just at the beginning, I think.
We're just at the beginning. We are.
All right. All right, guys. Take care.